you must have seen the video of Christian the Lion. If you haven't, there's a, I'd say a minority of people who've seen this now but haven't seen this, because this really stopped traffic on YouTube. It was Christian the Lion, the story of two men who bought a lion at Harrods when Harrods used to sell exotic animals. And they were two bachelors. They took it home to the King's Road, and it was released when the lion got too big for their flat on the King's Road in Chelsea, and it was released into the wild. And years later, the video captures the moment where they were reunited with the lion. And you think, oh, the lion's going to tear them to pieces. And it just jumps up and gives them a big, loving cuddle.
Huge paws over their shoulders. And it's just fabulous. And it is really very emotional. Well, now we get the opportunity to speak to John Rendell. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Jilly.
Good. It's lovely to speak to you. Now, John, of course, you are the John who had the lion, who had Christian. And releasing him, and it clocked over 100 million views on YouTube when it was released in 2009. Phenomenal. Tell us a little bit about Christian.
Well, he was an exceptional animal, and he, having bought from Harrods, who were allowed to sell exotic animals in 1969, the Endangered Species Act came in 1976, so that was the end of that. But he was always had a wonderful nature. We had him living in the King's Road or in our shop in the King's Road, and we never had any problems at all. You know, it was wonderful, gentle nature, but he just got too big. And we were concerned that, you know, if he fell against the window or something, he would injure himself. And when we had this opportunity to take him to George Adamson, the man whose wife wrote Born Free, the classic book about Ulster the Lioness, we thought this is a wonderful opportunity for this lion. And we took him out to George. It was a risk in many cases, because in many ways, because he'd never rehabilitated a fifth generation zoo bred lion before, but it worked. So he was a fantastic example of what can happen, you know, to animals who are born in captivity and then can be rehabilitated.
When you took him there, you took him to George Adamson's, and then you let him go, and it must have been very emotional, because he was your pet, to say, all right, Christian, off you go into the wild, unsure what was going to happen. But then you had the opportunity to go back and meet him again.
Well, it's a very good point, Jilly. It was a terrific wrench to leave him, but we knew that we were giving him to the top man, the man who would really be able to take him on to the next step. So, and in another sense, it was also quite a relief, because, you know, it was a full-time job. Although it was Ace and myself that, you know, really were at the core of it, we were the alpha males, if you like. Mm. There were seven other people in our flat or worked with us, girlfriends, you know, who were involved. So he was always had someone with him. It was a lot of work. But so when that was over, when we got him to Kenya, we thought, right, you know, it's we've got him here. He's safe. He's healthy. George was obviously fascinated by him, and he was the most successful of all his rehabilitation projects, because Christian was coming from behind everybody else. Elsa had been born in Africa. She knew the smells of Africa, and Christian certainly, you know, he'd never even seen another lion other than his sister. So
he'd been living in the King's Road, you know, living the high life in London.
I know. And he became an alpha male with his own pride. And this is so key to the survival of lions. And this is where the tragedy of Cecil is so awful, because he has left his pride vulnerable. So another alpha male, I think he's called Jericho, I read somewhere, from the next pride along, is going to come over, take over Cecil's pride. And, of course, the first thing that a new alpha male does is kill the cubs from the last alpha male.
Just to say he's in charge.
Well, yeah. Also, so he wants those lionesses, who will immediately come back into season, to bear his own cubs. So his own genes will be carried on. Now, in the natural cycle of things, when Cecil, he's 13, 14 or so, when he's about 16, he's probably coming to the end of his life, and a younger male will take him out, a younger male with stronger genes.
Well, how does that work? Does the younger male attack him? Or?
Yes, they come in, they fight. So he'll come in. See, Christian disappeared from George when he's 3 years old or 3.5 years old, and that's when a cub would be thrown out of its tried by his father. So they have to go off for a couple of years and gang up with a few other kind of young males. And then they decide they're strong enough, they'll go in, they'll take out the existing alpha male in a pride. But if you take one out prematurely and artificially like this, you're going to end up in trouble. You're leaving a pride vulnerable, and obviously the cubs will go. So it's really, you know, seven lions have been killed here.
We heard yesterday, and I was unaware of this, because, you know, on one camp they're saying, oh, that the hunters are there and that they're there doing a job to keep the numbers down, etc. But that's not true, is it? I spoke to a conservationist yesterday who said there are areas in Africa where lions are bred for hunting.
Well, this is a new twist on a terrible thing called canned hunting. And it's prevalent in South Africa. It's the most despicable thing, whereby... if you're in South Africa, you'll see advertisements for petting, opportunities to go and pet lions. Mm-hmm. So you go out to this place, and there's some nice, cuddly little lion cubs the size of Christian when we bought him, you know, 35 pounds. It's like a little live teddy bear. You can cuddle it. That's fine. Then they get to a point where you can no longer do that. They can't charge the tourists for that. So they go into a back pen somewhere where they feed them up, and, well, they just keep them. And then they'll come to a point where they will charge someone to come and shoot them. And that's why it's called canned hunting. You shoot them in a paddock, Chilly. It is absolutely despicable. And it's a huge industry. And the South African government turn a blind eye on it and say it's not true, but there's no legislation. But in fact, it is. You can go and pay to shoot a lion.
If you just nip that bit and you say it's a huge industry, if you look at it from the economy point of view, this is making a lot of money for this part of Africa. So if the government think, well, you know, this is making a lot of money here, this is great. It's an industry. It's bringing income to an area of poverty.
It is, but it's not bringing as much in as photographic safaris do. I mean, Kenya, there's no hunting, legal hunting in Kenya. And although there's a huge problem with poaching, that has a billion dollar tourist industry. Now, South Africa, okay, it's a much bigger country and a bigger economy than that, but their tourist industry is huge, and the main bulk of that is coming from people who want to go and see animals alive, not dead. And so it's a very nasty turn of events of way of raising money, but there is a huge link between illegal wildlife and all kinds of unattractive things, you know, that ivory's being sold to fund terrorism and drugs. It's a very, very murky world that wildlife has been dragged into.